when, you know, when you go out for a walk, when you're in the countryside, when you're up a mountain, that peace of mind you get is unlike anything else, I think, that I've experienced.
Yeah, for sure.
And I thought, what happens if I can replicate that day after day?
Hello and welcome to the Distance Hiker podcast. I'm your host Matthew, and today I have another guest for you. Wayne Mullane, today's guest, is a self-published author and a relative newcomer to hiking and the outdoors, which is really appealing to me because it's nice to hear some fresh new perspectives on hiking. And he came on to speak about that and his book Adventure Days. Now, I enjoy talking to Wayne because he shares this new story of hiking and how it's developed and subsequently led to him making the decision to walk up Ben Nevis. Now, what makes this interesting is that Wayne has a fear of heights. And at first I was perplexed by this, as I thought a fear of heights was a fear of looking down over a sheer drop, such as, you know, the side of a cliff face or a side of a large building. But for Wayne, it's also a fear of just being up high and being exposed. And it was at first crippling for him, having Wayne on his knees at one of his first experiences up a UK mountain with the world spinning around him, which, you know, it's very easy to forget how people experience things differently. So this opened my mind up to how challenging some people can find mountains when other people find them easy. And it was just really gracious of Wayne to share this with me in person and also on his book. Now, Wayne's story is very much one of overcoming adversity, and we discuss this, of course. In addition, we discuss his future hiking plans, the story of him getting from, you know, no walking and not really being into walking to walking up Ben Nevis. And of course, a little bit about his book. So it's a good podcast. It's a lovely story I'm sharing with you today. Really nice to speak to Wayne. So thank you, Wayne, for coming on and sharing this with me. Also, just a quick note on his book is, as I say, it's called Adventure Days. And the days is spelt D-A-Y-Z-E, as in to be in a daze because you're dizzy. So without further ado, I bring you episode 13 of the Distance Hiker podcast. Nice to meet you.
Me as well. Grand.
Thank you. You introduced yourself a little while ago on Messenger to me, asking if you could post about your book on the Facebook group. And
that's right.
And I thought, and I'm always really keen to kind of support others who are doing creative work, whether that's writing mm-hmm. or art or music or anything really that's creative and relevant to what we enjoy, which is ultimately outdoors and hiking.
Sure.
So of course I said, yeah, go for it. And I hope you got a few more followers and people interested from that post. But then when I kind of messaged a couple of months ago and I said, anybody fancy being on the podcast, you put your hand up and said, oh, me. So I thought absolutely perfect, you know, and I've since read your book from start to finish, thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thank you.
So I thought good starting point to getting to know you and talking about walking. So a bit of context before, I really want this year on this podcast, and it's probably evident from previous episodes that will be published by the time this one comes out.
Okay.
That I'm really interested in learning about the stories of people, regular folk, go out on the hills mm-hmm. and how the outdoors has changed and sort of connected into their lives in ways they might not have expected and been, you know, become a big part of their lives. And from reading your book, it's very obvious to me that hiking was something that maybe was not considered, but then became considered and has become a very big part and a central part of your life. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to, I'm assuming that, you know, somebody who's listening to this hasn't read the book.
Okay.
So I thought to good. I'm not going to go over, I'm not going to start from the point where I finished reading, because that wouldn't be fair. So I'm going to ask you, if it's okay, to kind of go back. I'm going to start with a simple question I ask everybody. So where did all this hiking craziness begin for you? Where was the kind of start of your journey? That was there a moment or a realization that you realized you wanted to go and start walking? Where did it begin?
Okay, sure. So going back to sort of early 2016, I'd had a couple of years where I'd been, well, maybe a bit longer that, where I'd been getting in from work. I'd been just lying down on the sofa all night, eating loads of snacks and things. And I've, you know, in a bit of a rut, every day was the same, going nowhere kind of thing. And I just kind of, I was lacking motivation and quite down in myself, really. So I just needed a change, and it was, you know, discussing with my friends and things when we'd meet up what we could do. And we just got to, let's just go for a walk. Let's just go out. And started looking at places, really. And West Berkshire appealed with Walbury Hill, which is the highest point in the southeast. And we thought we'd give it a go, and if we like it, we'll carry on doing it. It just spiraled from there, really. And before we knew it, a few months later, we were going up Scarfell Pike, which I think kind of, although it frightened the life of me going up there because of my fear of heights and things, it kind of cemented that this was something that we'd like to do more often. And it just, yeah, as I say, spiraled from there, really.
Okay, so you got into it, and your first hill was, your first fell was Scarfell Pike.
Yeah.
So you went from whereabouts? So it's not Surrey, was it? Is it Kent Hills?
It's Berkshire.
Berkshire. Yeah, oh, sorry.
That's cool.
Sorry.
No worries. Yeah.
Down London. Drugs, yeah,
that's cool. No worries.
So you went from Berkshire to one. Then, you know, were you working up to Scarfell Pike, or was it a fairly ad hoc trip that you took to walk in?
So basically, after, like, me and a couple of mates, Robin and Pete, we did that walk. We mentioned it to our other friends in the pub one night, and we said we should do walks to, say, Scarfell Pike, Snowdon, Ben Nevis, do one a year as a chance for us all to meet up, because we're sort of committed to our own families and our own lives as well. So it's a chance to meet up. It kind of came off the back of that, because I think Robin and I especially were very enthusiastic about carrying on as a hobby. And then Aaron and Robert, our other friends, just sort of joined in with that, and it gained momentum from there, really, as I could, just from discussion in the pub.
And when you walked up it, now the thing that obviously is quite central to your book is your fear of heights, which is why you call it Adventure Days. So from my understanding previous to reading your books, I always assumed a fear of heights was a fear of looking over, for example, you know, a building and looking down, and there's that sort of vertical drop that it invokes the fear. I've learned since reading the book that it's actually very different for you. Is that a common thing, that it's not that assumed kind of looking over an edge or something and that being the fear? Is it? Because a few, it's been high. Yeah, that's the scary part.
That's it. I mean, I think that everybody is something that, when speaking with other people, everybody's got their own interpretation of it, or, you know, it varies from one person to the next kind of thing, and that. I mean, for myself, I think looking over a building itself from like a top of a tall building isn't a bad thing. But what I found is all of a sudden I was up 300 meters high on the mountain, 400 meters, and my head would just completely go. And that was, something that was laying dormant in me probably since I was a child and things, but not since escalators in where was the tall escalator when I was a teenager on a school trip somewhere, did I have a feeling like that, really. And I think it's just an individual perception of how it affects you, so it's a very personal thing.
Were you not aware at before going up how it would impact you, because obviously you've never gone up anything this high before? Is it, is that an, totally unexpected.
It was. I mean, I think part of the reason for me getting up Scafell Pike, or even just being there in the first place to do that journey, was my ignorance of my fear of heights, really. So, and then it completely caught me off guard. Yeah. So
what was the experience then? What does that feel like? Because I'm sure there's people who obviously will have this. There's plenty of people who have a fear of heights, but. I, for example, I wouldn't say I do have a fear of heights. I used to rock climb, which does help with that, but I always used to find it scary. Wow. And I still find it scary looking over the edge of something when there isn't a rope on me. So I was always quite comfortable with gear on me. But if you sort of stood at the top, I don't like that feeling. But that's really not a fear of heights. It's just sort of a bit of, I don't know, caution, I think. But what does that actually feel like when that fear hits you? What's the feeling around that?
The main thing I can even see now, my hands are sweating as I'm talking about it. That's sort of, you know, having those sort of pictures in my mind. But when it hits, it is quite sudden, and it's like your mind, it goes into a swirling vortex, really, where you just can't hold on to thought, and you need to calm. It's one of the first things that I learned very fast was that I just had to stop probably more often than a lot of other people. And when you look up, when you look down, the mountains grow taller and everything else seems so far down below than what it is. And you have to, I don't know, close your eyes. You have to kind of just talk yourself to get through it. Stop every so often, get to the next maybe rocky outcrop and things, you know, break it down more than what you might do normally. And I think when my mind goes into that thing, I'm constantly analyzing every footstep as well, and that can be a bit of a pain, because you're literally sometimes too scared to put one foot in front of the other. But you know, thankfully with my friends, and that's helped me. Like that first time up Scafell Pike, they were taking it in turns to carry my rucksack, as they have done on a couple of mountains, really, just so that I could focus on getting from A to B repeatedly.
And do you find going down easier then?
Over time.
Because that would surely face you towards the direction of where the height is, rather than going up to where you don't see how high you are.
Yeah, I think, bizarrely for me, I think going down is sometimes, sometimes a bit easier, because I think I'm knowing that I'm heading back down and I'm going to get to the finish line, but by then your brain has become so tired and your legs are so locked that it is a mission. And again, I'll be stopping, I'll be taking deep breaths, etc., to calm myself, but maybe a little bit less often. But I think you're always questioning yourself and that, and you've got those voices screaming at you, you can't do this, you can't do this, and things. And you know, it's especially like there was that time going up Scafell, when I was coming down Scafell Pike, I saw a guy walking up barefooted, and that just, it just hit me. How can he, but you can't look at other people. You just have to focus on yourself. That's it. Yeah. You might, but
the bit that I'm really curious about here is that you've gone up this mountain, mm-hmm. you've got Scafell Pike, got to the top of it. I'm assuming the experience was pleasurable yet incredibly difficult at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, in terms of the sense of achievements and the views at the top, but also it was really challenging because of the fear of heights.
Yeah.
Most people at that point would go, well, most people might be unfair, but some people at that point perhaps would go, you know what? Scared of heights, not into this. This isn't for me. But you did the opposite. You, after that, got your eyes set on the next thing, which was Ben Nevis.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah. So
it was Snowden in between then, Ben Nevis.
Oh, Snowden in between. Cool. Sorry,
yeah, no, that's okay.
Yeah. So, but anyway, you got your eyes set on bigger hills. Yeah, Scafell Pike.
That's it.
What? So the experience after that, what can you tell me about how you felt after you got back down from that mountain, and then how that kind of, because that obviously was a catalyst for you to really want to go into this and get into walking big time.
It was, yeah. I mean, very much so. I mean, initially after coming back down from Scafell Pike, I was to my friends, I was like, look, I'm going to concentrate on lower level hills and mountains maybe. But, you know, they encouraged me, and that gave me the impetus to keep going then, really. And I think Snowdon, because it's such a well-structured path and it, you know, it's very touristy and things, as we went up the main route, that gave me a lot of encouragement then to go on to Ben Nevis. So that it was just propelling myself forward, really, and I think exposing myself to sort of more higher heights and things. And the thing that drove me on, I think, to carry on, one of the things was A, the need to want to overcome a fear, and B, just because the scenery of where we were at that moment, just stopping and looking around high up and seeing the valleys and everything and the peace and quiet, it was lovely. And that's something that I wanted to experience more of as well. Yeah.
Okay. And you obviously live in an urban area, relatively flat.
Mm-hmm.
What I quite enjoyed was reading about the preparation that went into this, because you obviously didn't have the option to sort of disappear off to hilly kind of countryside every weekend to train. No. You kind of very much made use of what was around you just to get your fitness up and to get the miles in,
mm-hmm.
in order to do these mountains. And particularly with, you know, Ben Nevis being, you know, the centerpiece of this book, mm-hmm. in terms of, you know, the climb that you wanted to do. So can you kind of explain how you used the city around you? Because some things which jumped out to me were, in particular, walking around London,
mm-hmm.
And making use of steps into museums and sort of,
right.
You know, pounding the pavement. And also, one of the things that really made me laugh was the idea of zombies, if I read that correctly in the book.
That's right, yeah.
Those bits caught me, because I know there's an app that you can use for running where as you run,
mm-hmm.
the zombie horde, you can hear them behind you in your headphones, mm-hmm. and if you stop, the noise gets closer and closer. So I don't think you used that, but yeah, tell, mm-hmm. just kind of go into a bit about what you did in terms of training for and preparing for this walk.
Cool. So I mean, like you say, making it, if it was like an urban walk, say the weather was quite shoddy and we couldn't get out, or you know, we had family commitments and things,
yeah,
like you say, it was making the use of anywhere and anything, like steps, especially. Like I work in Reading, and on occasion what I would do, I would walk every platform up and down the stairs and things during the weekday before I'd get the train home, things like that. Be in London, for instance, going to the tube stations, that we literally sprint and race each other up the stairs and things like that as well. So that was a thing. And like you say, with the museums, more locally, to sort of around my hometown of Maidenhead, to motivate myself to get out, because I'd obviously been into the countryside a lot, and you know, I had that sort of state of mind. I took it closer to home just to notice more, say, the trees and the greenery in my local area, and that, just being amongst all that, even though I was walking past houses and on roads and things, having those trees and noticing those gardens and bringing those things out gave me a good state of mind to encourage me to keep my footsteps up and things to keep going. And and another thing that I did, especially during lockdown, was like video hikes on YouTube. Pick a country.
Oh yeah.
And you know, there'd be guided tours around. I'd just be walking on the spot in front of the telly, or backwards and forwards from the kitchen to the living room whilst it was on. So it was just anything to get the footsteps up, really.
Oh wow. And what, did you have a specific amount of footsteps you're aiming for daily?
So it's like 10,000 is like nearly 5 miles, isn't it? I think whilst I was at home, I think my main thing was to walk an hour and a half in the house if I could. Mm. But in the evenings and things, after work, I would just walk for as long as I felt like. An hour and a half was about the normal for me, really, to sort of like keep going. And before you know it, you feel that you can do a little bit more, because it's walking builds you up progressively.
Yeah. Did you notice then an increase in your fitness as you progressed into this?
Yeah, very much so. And I think being fit as well was something that helped to keep my mind calm when I was on higher slopes and things, because you it's less of a battle with your body then, and it's about your mind. And I think if you can be, you know, good and healthy in your body, it's part of winning the battle to get the mission on the mountains done that bit more safely and easily. So yeah.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you then get to the day where you go and hike up Ben. So you sensibly, and I think I would have done the same, chose somewhere comfortable to stay where you get a choice of good breakfast.
Airbnb.
Good choice. Yeah. I think any retreat to the mountains of mates is best done somewhere like that. Tell me about that particular day and going up it, because I've not been up Ben Nevis personally. And I think for a lot of people, it's, you know, it's a popular mountain. There's no doubt about that. But it's, you know, it's not to be underestimated as well. It's very easy to underestimate mountains in Britain, but it is still a mountain nonetheless, and you know, it's a hard slog up. So tell us how you got on with it, and what the day entailed for you.
Okay, that's cool. So yeah, I think we made it there by about 9 o'clock. It took us about 8 hours, and I think, like I say, my friends were great with sticking by me, and I think if I was maybe on a sort of level as they were, we'd have probably done it in about 6.5, 7, something like that. But I started off fine. I remember going over that swaying bridge as you go over the river and things, and then up and things, enjoying the views. And then, yeah, about 300-400 meters in, my mind just goes again. It's an implosion, and I have to stop. And I think I took 2 liters of water with me. And by the time that we're probably about 400-500 meters up, I probably had about 200-300 mils left, so I wasn't in a good way. I felt hot, red, sort of sweaty, having to take frequent breaks and things, closing my eyes just to still my mind to make it, like I say, to the next pass and things. One of the tactics that found useful was that there'd be sort of people overtaking us, we'd overtake them, so that would slingshot you on, and that kind of helped as well. And you know, my friends are amazing, just encouraging me the whole time to make the journey. And I wanted to probably stop more times than I can count, really, you know. And it's just as when you think, okay, we're over this pass, it's not too far now, and then somebody says, oh, you've still got about 45 minutes to go, your heart sinks. But it's the constant mind battle it is, really. But
yeah, the blind summits, isn't it? You just don't see.
That's it.
False summits.
That's it. But then, you know, you make it, you're looking down, and it's like you, it's funny, it's like you said, when you look down from something, you think that would induce that fear maybe a little bit more. But I was able to I think, you know, it's just so lovely, it's so peaceful, that sense of where you're at and what you're experiencing, it kind of overrides the fear, and you know, that's what keeps you going. The way down, my legs were locking like crazy. You know, again, I was stopping tons of times, really, too countless to mention and things and that. And I remember seeing my friend Aaron, he sort of went skinny dipping in one of the locks and things, a peat bog, and I was completely out of water again. My friends had helped me fuel up, and I just filled up with peat water, and I was drinking that constantly. So but yeah, then finally got down, and it was just a massive sense of achievement, really, although I was just so out of adrenaline by then, you know, but yeah,
just did all that.
That's it. Yeah. So, but yeah, it was a good day, and we, you know, and like I say, I think these mountains, without my friends, I just would not have been doing them up to this point, really. So it's good that they're there to spur me on.
And how long ago was it since you kind of started from, give us a kind of time scale from when you kind of got into it, went up Scarfell Pike to when you then went up Ben Nevis. How long was that?
Okay, so started hiking May 2016, went up Ben Nevis, early summer 2018, that would have been, so just over 2 years, really.
Okay. So you come down from Ben Nevis, having that really big sense of achievement, and I guess after doing that, do you feel you became, you started to come to terms with the fear of heights better?
I think so.
Or was it still there?
It's something that is still present, but I'd say it's something that I'm more able to better understand and better maybe control. Yeah. We went to 2019, we went to, I hope I say the name right, in Republic of Ireland, Caruntahill in County Kerry. Doing the Devil's Ladder there. It's like, I don't know, yeah, it's quite a steep slope kind of thing. And once I got to the top of that, although I was, my mind was rolling over like crazy, my mates were just trying to keep me going with chit chat. It was once I reached the top of that, I thought, you know what, this is a fear, but I can do this, I can get it. And coming down, we came down like the mountain next to Caruntahill, and it was a thin path, and then all of a sudden a storm picked up and the wind was blowing everything. I slipped twice and it was such a thin rope. I was like, oh my god, am I going to make this or not? But once I got down there, that's what cemented it into me that I can get on top of this, I can achieve this. You just have to keep going and keep exposing yourself to this kind of environment, really, make yourself better.
That's interesting, because what I really liked about reading the book is that it was very much a beginner's experience of starting hiking, from taking the first kind of steps out into the kind of weird world of, you know, hiking, to getting up, you know, Britain's highest mountain, Scotland's highest mountain. And then there was a bunch of kind of what I would say is very good advice at the end in terms of kit and,
thank you,
you know, fitness and things. And I thought that was really good. So that's pretty much where I that's all the information I was able to learn about you through that. But I know that there's a gap from that book to where you are now, with a dose of coronavirus and pandemic in the middle. So I kind of obviously you've joined UK long distance hiking because, you know, you've started to get into long distance hiking, or or got an interest into it. So after you finished Ben, what happened next? Where did this hobby take you?
Okay, so 2019 was a good year. So I'm just putting my phone away there. 2019 was a good year. We said we're going to do as many mountains and hills as we can. We went to Penavan was the first one. That was an amazing hill. It was I wasn't scared on that at all, because it was like rolling up and there was no big drops looking down. So, you know, that was a confidence booster. Then obviously lots of local walks in between. And then we did the, I can't remember if it was, oh no, it was Caruntahill came first that summer. That was more or less a year after Ben Nevis. And as you know, as I've said, that was a brilliant experience. Then the Yorkshire Three Peaks, that was,
oh yeah, go on. So I'm going to stop you on the Yorkshire Three Peaks. So that's a toughie.
Yeah.
So did you try to do it within the 24-hour period?
So we did it in about 15 hours. We started off about 7 in the morning, got back at 10 at night and things. And there were 6 of us that day, and it was just that was good. Again, there was another. I can't remember, was it Wernside that it was? I can't remember which one, but it had like another sort of scrambly bit, like Caruntahill, like the Devil's Ladder, and I was, again, I could feel myself wanting to stop, but you just keep ploughing along and things, you know, and doing that. But 15 hours is what it took us, really. Whereas other people, I think Aaron had done it previously and we'd done it, and he'd done it in about 11 and things. So with me there, it's not always going to go on time and according to plan, but you know, we get there. So and where else?
Did you feel a big difference in terms of your, because you obviously done quite, you know, really up the ante of the walking that year.
Then. Yeah.
Did you really notice a difference in terms of your fitness levels from, you know, doing Ben to Yorkshire Three Peaks? Because I say Yorkshire Three Peaks is probably harder day out than going up Ben, because you've not one peak, you've got three.
That's right. Yeah, I think there was that sort of preconception before where I wouldn't make it. Three mountains might just be too much in one go. But I think, you know, sort of fitness had gathered a momentum now, as as well as probably eating a bit too much as well. But that's how I try to balance that out. But yeah,
balance is important.
That's it. Yeah. But you know, I think just the fact that you're feeling fitter, I think you instinctively feel that you can do much more and things, you know. And sort of like to round off the year, we did the Malvern Hills as well, and that took us a bit. That was in November, and that was terrible weather, which was a good experience and things. And then, yeah, we crept into the pandemic really, and everything just shut right down, and it became, you know, that bit more difficult to get further afield. So yeah,
how did you cope at that point with the pandemic? Because I think everybody who, you know, enjoyed walking, mm-hmm. suddenly, you know, their hobby was in some ways snatched away.
That's right.
At least for the periods you're in lockdown, where you could only, you know, exercise locally, and there's only, you know, you probably could go further afield without questions being asked, but mm-hmm. there's definitely a sense of feeling like you should walk, you know, round the block or to the local woodland and back or whatever without going too far.
Yeah.
How did that impact you? Did you cope well with it? Did you find space to carry on walking?
Yeah. It's yeah, like I said, you know, as you say, mentally it was very challenging, especially if you're quite an outdoorsy type, and we're being told we've got to stay in more often and things, and you have to adapt around that. I mean, the street walks really took on a big thing in the first lockdown, especially, and that carried on. I remember I was reading, is it Micro Adventures by Alistair Humphreys, where
great book.
It's brilliant. And he talked about possibly walking every single street in your town, and I didn't get that far, but I did discover some sort of new sort of urban local places and some new little green spaces as well, really, which offered sort of retreat. As I mentioned, one thing that I'd been quite ignorant really was my local area and things. Like we've got the Thames just on our doorstep, you know, where we can walk to Windsor or to Cookham. The local woods, Goulding Woods is where Kenneth Graham, who wrote Wind in the Willows, used to walk and everything as well. So there's good places like that. The other thing that I did was just walking up and down my back garden, getting my 10,000 steps in like that and things, getting very odd looks off neighbours to begin with. And as I say,
doing that. Yeah, then Captain Tom does it and it becomes normal,
that's
doesn't it?
Yeah, very much so. That's it. Yeah, it becomes the norm. And as I say, doing the urban hikes, one thing that I did was I'd put like a video on of every sort of country in the world, their capital, and I'd try and walk, do like a 20-minute or 40-minute walk of every single capital going and things, and just to sort of say, so I'm traveling the world whilst it's shut down, really. So that
also similar to what you did when you were training for the for Ben Nevis with the walk.
Yeah, that's right. But just built on that really and things, and it was so it's just finding new ways to not let the mental rot get to you, really. And I think lots of people probably came up with other sorts of sort of like ingenious ways and things like that to cope. So yeah, so that's
So you must be backing onto the Thames Path then.
So yeah, we're not too far from that, to be honest. I mean, it'll probably 10 minutes in the five to 10 minutes in the car, but a good 20-minute walk and things. I can walk. One of my favourite walks locally is between Maidenhead and Cookham, but then you go over the bridge again and you can walk to Windsor and things as well. And quite sort of, if we go out to West Barks again, places like Pangbourne seems to happen a lot in our walks. Yeah. I think
I did notice it came up quite a few times.
That's it. So we do quite a lot of the Thames Path around there as well, really. So it's been one of our main things, and the Kennet as well. We're starting to sort of like walk up to Newbury sort of, and hopefully get to Bedwin, that next leg of it, one day as well. So you know, river walks are quite a feature of what we do.
What would your local walking countryside be then beyond that? Because obviously you're quite close to the Cotswolds, aren't you?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you've got Oxfordshire.
I've dialed a geography now. I've kind of put my finger on where you are.
No, that's cool. So yeah, I mean, if you just sort of head that little bit further north, we've got the Chilterns. Sometimes we do walks with groups on meetup.com. They're like the
organised. Some really good grouping walk groups on there, aren't
they? That's it. And it's nice when somebody else organises it for you. You don't have to think too much about where you're going. Of course, you know, being in the home counties, we've got like the Hampshire hills as well. The Surrey hills are really good actually, because they're quite steep. Leaf hills are very
Box Hill.
Yeah, that's a good walk, the Box Hill Circular with the National Trust things. That's a brilliant walk to do. Beyond that, I think, yeah, as you say, you're going out more into the Cotswolds and things like that then, really. But I've never really done the Cotswolds, to be honest, but that would be a good one to do.
Okay, so on to long distance hiking. Sure. So where does long distance hiking come into this?
So
and I'd say that Yorkshire Three Peaks definitely counts as a sort of ultra distance hard long hike, so that's kind of like a good start for it, I think.
That's cool, thanks. Yeah, it's it was when I was looking on Facebook's groups and things, and long distance hiking, because when you go out for a walk, when you're in the countryside, when you're up a mountain, that peace of mind you get is unlike anything else, I think, that I've experienced.
Yeah, for sure.
And I thought, what happens if I can replicate that day after day? And that's what the sense I got when I joined the group as well. You know, you're reading people's posts and things and about what they're doing. And so when was it I joined? It was sort of summer last year, I think, something like that.
I think so, yeah, thereabouts. It's when you messaged me, I think, around that time.
Cool. Yeah, and then from there, I sort of had it planned out to sort of like one of my sort of side projects is to visit every single county in England before I die, kind of thing, you know, to spend a few days in each. And I started that off. I went up to Northumberland and I just fell in love with the place, and walking along Hadrian's Wall, I went into the North Pennines, you know, and it was like just trying to push yourself to get more miles in every day. And it's such a rewarding thing. And you're out in the middle of nowhere and you're relying on yourself, and you know, you can just stop and see the world go by. And that's, I think, what made it appeal. So one of the main sorts of things for me, I think, when I'm long distance hiking is you've got your set, you know, your trails, like your national paths and things, but I tend to pick an area, a county, and do a few days. So I go to a different place on each one and do a good long walk that way, really, to see as much of the county as possible.
Oh, okay. So do you, when you do that, do you tend to drive between and kind of then do a few day walks in a particular area and stay somewhere else, or do you just sort of pick your own route as you choose?
Oh, so what I do is, because I don't drive, I normally just I'll get the train up and bus it to places as well, really.
Yeah.
And my first couple of holidays, I'm going up to Northumberland again in May to do the coast as well there, really, but the coastal path. But
are you going to do the whole stretch of the coastal path?
A good chunk of it anyway. I'd like to see, whilst I'm there, I would like to see the Cheviots as well. So I might, you know, so it's going to be a bit of a mix and match, I think. But definitely.
It's about doing what suits you though, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Having a variety of scenery as well. Yeah. So, but yeah, like as I say, bus or train. I used to be a little bit skeptical about getting buses, because you know, if they don't turn up and you're in the middle of the countryside, that's a sort of thing that I think with a bit of planning, okay, I'll get off at a village and at least then there's maybe a pub there and I can get the taxi back if I have to. So it's all in the pre-planning.
Yeah, worst case scenario.
Yeah, that's
So you've got the Northumberland very much on the cards then. What other areas can it take your fancy then for long distance hiking?
So, yeah, sure. So I'd like to do more of the Thames Path, definitely. That's you know, that's an ongoing.
I'm going to say it's the shouting at you being on your doorstep, that one.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Yeah.
Be rude not to.
Yeah. And I think they've just extended the Thames Path from what I've read recently.
You're correct. Yes, they have. They've added a bit from the Thames Barrier now to the sea.
Wow. So, yeah. cool. And yeah, and also I think we've got the Ridgeway, the Ickney Old Way near us as well. Yeah. And where else? We're going up to Cumbria in the summer, like my friends and I, and we're going to do the Old Man of Coniston there. But I think nice. We're looking more at wild camping this time as well. So that'll be a first time. Yeah.
Oh, it'll be first time for you, will it? Okay.
Yeah. And,
oh, great. So that's quite interesting, actually. So on all of these trips and adventures and hikes you've done, I'm assuming then you kind of stayed at B&B's, hotels, things like that.
Yeah. I mean,
cool. So what's taking you fancy with wild camping? Is it you just want to have a go and see what it feels like?
Yeah.
Have you done anything like it before?
Well, we've camped a few times now, like when we've been up to Rutland. Rutland's become a little haven for us as well, really, with the lake. It is brilliant. And I think it's just a natural progression. On YouTube, I tend to watch a lot of these bushcraft people that go out into the woods and things. And I think that's been a bit of a driving factor for me there and things. And because Robin and I are hoping, once things do clear a lot more with the pandemic, to maybe do the Kungsleden in Sweden for a few days as well and things. So that would be
which trail is that? Sorry, so
the Kungsleden in Sweden. It's like one of their sort of main national trails. Cool. Yeah. And I think
king of all the trails, Swedish Lapland.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's
that looks
quite far north. I think it's only walkable for is it June, July and some of August or something like that.
Right.
So and we're sort of gearing ourselves up towards that, really. So that's a kind of focal point for us at the moment.
Oh, wow. Are you wanting to do the whole thing then? In one go,
we're
break it up?
We'd love to. I think it might be maybe a two-parter because of the family commitments and things and time off work. Of it would probably be something.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's 450 kilometres. So
yeah.
It's not that short, is it? Yeah, it looks amazing, though. So when do you think you might do that?
I think we're looking now. We're going to give it this year because of, hopefully we are coming out of the pandemic now, and then maybe summer next year, 2023.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, wow. I mean, I look at a lot of the trails in Scandinavia and also Europe, and they really do appeal, don't they?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, some of them are super remote.
Yes.
Pretty remote as well, and there's a real appeal to that. So when are you planning to do your first wild camp then?
So that will be it'll be early July, the Old Man of Coniston. See how that one goes, that we can prepare.
Are you gonna go and camp near the summit or halfway up or something, or are you gonna camp local?
I think
at the bottom of it or something.
Sure. I think from what's been discussed is that we'll sort of maybe head off late afternoon, camp near the summit, and then come back down the following day. So it's I know that there are other, from speaking to other people, there are some other quite good wild camping spots at the base of the mountain as well, or in that valley. So it might be worth checking.
There's a couple of turns that, as you come, kind of go to the top. It's been years since I've done it, but you sort of go to the top and then you kind of walk back around and then down into the valley. And you'll see a couple of turns as well. And they're always really nice spots for that kind of stuff because you've got access to water as well for the night.
Oh, see, that's important.
Which is quite appealing. And you're sort of tucked away a little bit out the wind as well because you're sort of obviously in a bit of a dip of the mountain.
Gotcha.
So that could be worth a look. That sounds great. Yeah. So really, this is this has really taken hold then, you know, that you've gone from, you know, walking up Scafell Pike to Ben Nevis, and you know, now just looking at, you know, doing trails in Sweden and wild camping and things.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Is this do you have in your head then a tick list of any UK trails beyond Norfolk Coast Path that you want to do? Anything that on the group that's taking your interest?
Okay, yeah, I mean, where was the coastal? Cornwall and Devon. I'd like to do the coast there. I've seemed to have developed a thing about coasts and that. And I think the Offa's Dyke Path, and it is very much on my hit list as well to complete. The Hadrian's Wall path as well. So, when we were at Ben Nevis, it's not Fort William Way.
West Highland
that's
Way.
That's the one. Yeah, that's something that we have all talked about, and that's more of a group thing that we all seem to like. So,
of course.
So yeah, I'd love to do that. And then
it's without a doubt, West Highland Way is the is probably Britain's most popular long distance hiking trail.
Yeah.
So I think you need like a year in advance if you're going to book any accommodation. Oh, wow. It's that popular to if you want to get easily get the accommodation, you have to book so far in advance for that one. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Especially over the last few years. Oh, yeah.
That's it.
That sounds great.
Gosh, yeah. I mean, it's like when we were booking the accommodation for Ben Nevis, we were phoning around in the January, and the guy said, "You are phoning quite late here." So it's like, you know, it's a lesson learned big time, definitely. So
Oh, brilliant. That sounds great. Yeah. So I'm going to just quickly touch on your book again, if that's all right.
Okay.
So you, most folks, when they get into this, enjoy the walking, but you, and just enjoy the walk, you decided to write a book about it.
Mm-hmm.
What inspired you to jump in and start to write about your experiences in quite a lot of detail?
Oh, okay. So I think after a few months of doing hiking, I wanted to just maybe keep a journal of all my different hikes and things like that. And so by the time that I came to write the book, I'd already had a fair bit of material to relate to. Sure. And I obviously, with the fear of heights, with the ability to get myself lost at the drop of a hat, even with GPS, there were themes that were coming out, and the fact that, you know, the fitness, the friendships, there were themes that I wanted to kind of maybe explore. And I love writing, you know, I love writing like short stories and things, and and so just to write a book and to self-publish, and how easier it is to get to market these days with the whole self-publishing thing, I thought, just go for it really and see where it takes me.
Was it very much a lockdown project then, or was it before that you did it?
It was before, to be honest. I was ready to release the book, I think January, February 2020, but then with the lockdown happening, I was like, oh no, what do I do? And the lady that was proofreading my work, she advised maybe just to hold off and to see how things go with the pandemic. So I did another year's worth of work onto that really, and so I released it summer of last year.
Oh, brilliant. So what made you, did you just go straight for the self-publishing option, or did you kind of consider doing the published option?
I did, but I like the idea that I had that sort of element of control about what I was doing. Thankfully the lady, Jessica, who checked my work, she was very thorough and very good with her knowledge of self-publishing and very encouraging me. And that sort of gave me a good insight to get to market and things. And I think it was more the fact that I was in control of my own destiny, really, which really appealed.
Yeah. Mm. And then I'm quite interested in this on a personal level, just because I think, you know, creating something regardless of what it is always kind of super interesting to me.
Cool.
In terms of getting that book in the physical format, because it's not just an ebook, is it? It's you had some physicals printed, am I right?
Yeah. So what happens is basically,
how does that work?
So basically with Amazon, if you put your book up there, you can choose it to be an ebook or a paperback, and they'll get the ISBN number for you, you know, all on the back and things, and then they print the books. So all the printing costs.
Oh, do they? Yeah. I didn't realize this actually comes from Amazon, some affiliated printing house with Amazon.
I guess it's something that, but they'll take care of all the printing and things, whereas you can self-publish and you can obviously pay for a company then to print it off and things, but this is one of those things that helps.
Perhaps.
Yeah, that's right.
Did you have to have like a minimum amount of prints that you get them to do?
No.
Or do they print as many as they want?
No, from the very first order. So I mean, although I haven't got a full understanding of it, I think it's very much that they can sort of print to order, basically. So, you know, if I ordered five copies now or one copy, then it would come through like that, really. So it's it's been a learning curve.
Cool. Yeah. And who did the artwork on the front of it as well?
Oh, so I went on Fiverr, the freelancing website, I just looked for a lot of different people and got in touch with a couple of what was her name, Laura Antonioli, and she sent me a few designs, and it was just choosing the most favourite one, really. So
brilliant.
Yeah.
So are you planning on doing another one?
So yeah, I I'm keeping a journal and things, and it's sort of looking for themes now, and I think the whole, as you say, the whole long distance hiking thing is coming into it a bit more and things. But I guess maybe, you know, whereas people may walk trails, I don't know if my way is a little bit more unconventional, like picking a county and then sort of going for big, long, different day walks in different areas.
If you're my honest opinion, I think unconventional actually works better in some ways. I think that there's a lot of really great books out there about walking long distance trails. Mm-hmm. You know, Salt Path, for instance, by Raina Wynn is one of those.
That's right.
And there's a lot of books of a similar nature to that, and they're all wonderful. But actually, you know, there's a reason why authors like Alistair Humphreys, for instance, do, you know, reasonably well, because they look at unconventional ways of presenting adventure and allowing people to do that. So where, for instance, you're in a situation, obviously, where you don't drive, so you know, you have that additional challenge of having to work your trips around, you know, access through public transport, which isn't always that easy with national long distance trails, because it's so much easier if you can park it, you know, drive up, you know, stick your car at the end of the trail, get a bus or taxi to the beginning of it. And then when you're finished at your car and you drive home. But not having that option adds cost, obviously. Although I'm so sure you probably save money throughout the total of a year of using public transport over having a car, and adds, you know, time as well. So I think that would be of interest to lots of people, where you kind of perhaps feel that pressure to do the whole trail or to do it in a particular way that seems the right way to do it. Actually, there's not really a right or wrong way to do it. It's just about going out and doing it.
Yeah,
that makes sense. So unconventional is good, in my opinion. Anyone who can do something a bit different is good. So I think let's stick with your guns on that. My opinion.
Cheers, thanks, appreciate that. Yeah, it's funny you should say that, though, with the travel. With train travel, that you do a lot of research into tickets. And my current journey up to Northumberland to Berwick, you know, the most northerly town in England, King's Cross return, £44. And normally,
that's very reasonable.
If you was it through Lumo, wasn't it, the new website? Whereas normally it would cost, I think, anywhere in the region of £160, £200 if I was going sort of tomorrow or in a week's time or something like that. So,
Lumo trains. I've never heard of it.
I think they only run out of King's Cross, and they go like Newcastle, Berwick. Is it Berwick? Yeah, Berwick.
Oh, I see.
And Edinburgh, so you can get some very good deals, but I think they do go like hotcakes. So I was quite fortunate.
I'm sure
really.
They do. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, that's super interesting. So where can people start to wrap it up now? So where can people find out about you if they want to read the book and learn more about your walking?
That's cool. So I'm on Instagram, really. That's at Mullane Wayne. Also my website, waymullane.com. That's sort of where you'll find sort of most of the information, but then that'll link to my main sort of blogging website, and that's like an amalgamation of all my hikes, and I do book reviews there as well, really. And there's some short stories and poems, and I am on Twitter, but I'm still getting used to that, really, because I focused a lot on Instagram first of all, so I have to break things down for my mind, and that's generally the main sorts of places that where I am online, and so that's cool.
I didn't realize you were on the gram, so I'll have to, give you a follow.
Oh, that's grand. That's where I've kind of tended to sort of gravitate a bit more towards, I think, really, since I published the book. So, it's a sort of quick instant hit. But, that's cool.
Yeah, you can definitely, especially if you're doing something, you know, like writing, you can get quite a lot of interest on Instagram in particular. If there's any help, so one of the previous guests I had on here last year, but I published the episode this year, Ursula Martin, She's self-published. She's the lady who walked from Ukraine to the UK. And she actually just does a lot of writing on Instagram. So she puts a post up and starts her posts with, "Today I went for a walk," and then continues it with the really nice bit of writing underneath each post to just create. So that's I think that goes down really well because it just allows her to publicly write daily while being in the context of, you know, walking or something that's interesting.
Oh, so,
she's a good follow. But anyway.
Well, that's a good name. I've written that.
It's been lovely to have you on. Yeah, it's been lovely to have you on today.
Brilliant. Thank you. I've really enjoyed it and I appreciate this. So,
no, it's a pleasure and I appreciate it too. I always feel I owe more of a favour to the guests who come on and grace my show. So it's thank you so much for joining me. I look forward to sharing the episode with everybody, you know, in probably a couple of weeks' time.
That's excellent. Thanks for the opportunity and thanks for reading the book as well in your comments.
Absolute pleasure. No problem at all. Really nice to speak to you. Take care, Wayne.
Cheers. Thank you. All the best now. Cheers. Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Thank you so much for listening to the episode. I hope you enjoyed listening to the episode of Wayne there. And if you did, do feedback. So I'd love to hear from you. As always, messages are just amazing and make my day. But if you do want a message, feel free to go through Instagram or Facebook. So Instagram is at Distance Hikers. Facebook is just Distance Hiker. Or just email me at matthew@distancehiker.com. I will always reply to all messages every single time. Relatively quickly. I love hearing from you guys, so I hope you really enjoyed the show. And on to next week's episode, we have got Martin, who is a long distance hiker who wrote a rather lovely book about walking all of the national trails in England over the course of I think over 10 years, if I recall. So I look forward to bringing you that episode in a couple of weeks' time. But for now, I hope you're well and enjoy whatever you're doing for the rest of your day. Thank you for listening.